Hi, guys. Welcome back to Mostly Balanced with Mia and Carly.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back. We're so happy to share this episode. I really, really loved it.
I had so much fun recording with Vanessa and Xander. I feel like they are, first of all, such a fun couple. I think the fact that they work together just even, I imagine, like improves their dynamic even more, especially the line of work that they're in. Vanessa's a sex therapist, and now they work together helping thousands of couples improve their sex life.
I really love all their content. As soon as I saw their website or Instagram, I knew we needed to have them on the show because we have so many people, especially women. And I say this in the episode, we have so many episodes talking to like sex therapists and women talking about intimacy. And it was great to have a male perspective. And that's kind of how they market him in their own line of business, that Vanessa, it has 20 years of experience as a therapist and sex therapist and all of these like amazing credentials. And Xander's just like a normal guy who's here to talk with his wife all day about sex. So it's fun to hear their dynamic. You can clearly hear it in our conversation with them and all of the resources that they have. They have a book that just came out. They have amazing like downloadable resources and guides. They have an amazing social media presence. So just so many fun things to definitely explore and check out after you listen to this episode if you don't know of them already.
Yeah, I'm personally going to be downloading some of their guides, especially some of the ones we talked about in this episode. So I won't spoil anything. But yeah, we really talk about a lot. We talk about like actual, like actionable advice on how to talk to your partner about sex, no matter what stage you are in the relationship. So whether that's like someone you're newly dating that you haven't even slept with yet, or somebody that you've been together with for 10 years and you want to start talking about how to improve your sex life, how to switch things up, how to like reignite that spark, or what to do when your sex drives are different from each other's, like just so many practical things instead of just like, of course, we talk about the importance of communication, but we talk about how to actually communicate instead of just like communication will help. There's key tangible advice there. So that's what you guys know that we love. And it was really helpful to get that from a male and a female perspective.
Yes. And we say it here all the time. And obviously, we've had many episodes on this topic, but I just don't think like these conversations about your sex life with your partner should ever be taboo. And I was thinking, I was at a bridal shower this weekend and my husband's aunt was talking to me about how she listens to the podcast and she referenced a Jared Freed episode. And I got like kind of like blushing thinking about how we have a couple episodes coming out talking about sex and intimacy. And I just think it's like, it's something that we all put so much weight on. Like we talk about, it's kind of like frowned upon if you don't have sex in your relationship, or like, it's like, if you talk about it too much though, then like, that's like going over the line. Like it's this strange topic that holds so much weight in a lot of people's lives. And a lot of people feel pressure or self-conscious, all sorts of feelings tied to the topic. And I think it just can swing in either direction of like, you're not talking about it enough, or you're not doing it enough, or you're talking about it too much, or you're like, I don't know. I just think there's so many different perspectives. And I just like these conversations because it normalizes and gives people like the tools and the words to say to talk about something that is really important to all of our relationships and intimacy. Or most relationships, I shouldn't say all.
Yeah, I totally agree. And it's funny because we kind of do talk about this a little bit in the episode, but like the fact that people do barely talk about it, but yet then they like measure their own sex lives against other people's who they really don't know much about at all. They're just kind of like assuming or basing off of like the tiny things they hear from them. And then they think that they're, what's going on with them is either weird or not normal or like not as good. And it's all based on like the very small, limited amount of communication that we have around the topic. So it's definitely like something that we are always happy to talk more about. But it's funny, I'm like the same way, like my mom listens. So sometimes I'm like editing it. I'm like, do I keep this in? But I keep it all, so everyone gets to hear it.
Yes, no shame.
But yeah, I'm excited for everyone to hear it. You had two showers this weekend, right?
Yes, I'm on a bridal shower circuit Saturday and Sunday.
Yeah. Which means there must be a wedding circuit coming.
Yes, exactly. Yes, I have two weddings coming up in the fall, so really exciting. One of them's a big trip, which I'm excited to share more about.
Yeah, I can't wait for you to share more about that. I had a very low-key weekend. I actually had like a lot of work I had to do, but then I also had my mom visiting, which was so fun. We went to Otway. Have you ever been there before?
No, where is that? in the neighborhood.
It's like so cute. Yeah. So it's like pretty much right by the C train, but not on the side that Emily is on. It's on like the other entrance side. And it's like, there's like a bakery and coffee shop there that's called Otway, owned by the same people that I always go to get like a matcha or something. Mm. And they have like homemade pastries, which are delicious. But I didn't realize that they have like a sister restaurant too, just two doors down. And we went there and it was just like the cutest vibe. I was like, why do I not? I feel like sometimes you don't expect the places that are like right on Fulton to really be that cute. But right. It was so good. And I had avocado toast. It was literally delicious. And it was just a perfect little Brooklyn brunch. So if anyone lives in Brooklyn, definitely check it out.
That sounds amazing. Yes. I don't go in that direction as much, but I'll need to come. And I love that you hung out with your mom. She is, if our listeners don't know, number one, mostly balanced fan. So I'm sure we'll be hearing lots of feedback from today's episode from your mom.
We walked by your building. I was like, that's where Mia lives. You were like the whole neighborhood door. But yeah, so this week we're just going to get right into the episode. We'll have a solo either next week or the following week so we can dive deeper into listener questions. So if you guys have anything that you want us to answer, please send us an email to hello@wearemostlybalanced.com. You can send us any type of question, dating, relationship, friendship, anything you have going on. We always like to get all the details and then we dive deeper into it in our solo episodes.
Yes, thanks so much for listening. And we hope you love this conversation with Vanessa and Xander. Welcome back. This is a conversation I've personally been looking forward to for so long. We are joined by a licensed psychotherapist with 2 decades of experience in the sex therapy field and her husband, who is just a regular guy who gets to talk about sex all day with his wife. So welcome to Mostly Balanced, Vanessa and Xander.
Thanks for having us. We're so excited to be here.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, we're so excited to have you guys on. We always like to start just by having our guests introduce themselves. So can you tell everybody listening where you're from, where you live, and then both of you tell us a little bit more about how you got into what you do?
I'm Vanessa. We live in Santa Barbara, which is also my hometown. We just moved back last year, so I've been away for 20 years, and it's really nice to be back. And I am the sex therapist, like you just said. So I initially got interested in sex because of my parents' attempt at giving me the talk. So like so many people, it was incredibly awkward. And that moment really stuck with me. I remember in the moment thinking like, why is this so awkward? Why are my parents so uncomfortable? Basically, their version of the talk was saying, if you have any questions about, you can ask us. But it was very clear that what they were actually saying in the moment was,
never,
please, for the love of God, don't ask us anything. We don't want to talk about it. This is totally taboo. And so it really stuck with me in that moment, like just wondering, why can't we talk about it? Because I did have questions. I was hearing things on the playground and I wanted to be able to talk about it. So I had no idea that sex therapy existed as a career at age 11, but I kept coming back to that moment and eventually realized, you know, I think I want to do this for a career. I think this is kind of the reason why I'm here, is to help people get more comfortable talking about sex. So I started the business on my own, but then Xander ended up joining me and we created this really special thing where we focus on helping couples keep the spark alive in their long-term relationship with online courses and guides. And we just wrote a book that came out this year called Sex Talks: 5 Conversations That Will Transform Your Love Life.
Yeah, well, what did I do to get into this? I guess I like the way you asked that question, because the first thing I thought of was, well, all I did to get into this was meet Vanessa. I was lucky enough to meet Vanessa back in 2007. I had no idea that I would ever be doing this. This was never something that was part of my career aspirations. I met Vanessa pretty soon after I graduated from college, and I was in the consulting world in San Francisco, and you know, just sort of starting a career. Thought like I would be doing a career sort of in the corporate consulting type of industry. And over our relationship, over the first like 8 years or so, bounced around between a couple jobs. I ended up in tech, and ultimately, I just felt like I wasn't really sure what good I was doing for the world. I just felt like I was missing something, you know, in my life and in my career. And at the same time, I was seeing Vanessa building this business and starting to transition her one-on-one therapy practice to online and starting to do online courses. And I was really jealous of this business that she was building. And, you know, she could work from anywhere in the world as long as there was internet. And she was helping all these people. And so actually, I ended up quitting my job because I was just not feeling very fulfilled. And, you know, Vanessa said that she would take care of me financially for a couple of years since I had taken care of her when she was in grad school, you know, for me to figure things out. And pretty quickly, I figured out that it was stressful not working and not doing anything and not knowing how I was contributing to our relationship. I was dealing with some of my own stuff. And so Vanessa gave me a couple projects here and there to work on to help her with her business. And pretty soon I was just like, oh, I can help out with all kinds of things. And I kind of grew into just being the COO of her business.
Well, I had the thought that, like, I think that there's something really special about us being able to talk about sex and relationships together as a couple. Like, we've gone through our own ups and downs. And Xander was really resistant at first because he said, you know, well, I don't have the training. I don't have the degrees. I don't have the license the way that you do.
Yeah, I just watched her for all these years go through all of this stuff to get to where she was. And I was like, it's not fair for me to do that. I haven't done any of those things.
But I said, I think that's the point, though. Like, sometimes you like need to hear from an expert who has all this training, but especially with a topic as sensitive as sex, like, we also just want to, we're curious about, like, everyday people, like, how do they deal with it in their relationships? And so we started over many years, I convinced Xander, but we started talking about this more openly as a couple, sharing our own story and talking about relationships. And that really seemed to strike a chord with our community.
I love that. And I love that you're here, Xander. I was even thinking as I was preparing for today and thinking about talking to you both, the conversations we've had on our show about sex and having sex experts. And we haven't really had a male perspective in that realm. Like, yes, for dating and relationships, but even like the podcasts and resources I find, it's mostly female led. So it's great to have you here. And I think I totally agree with you that anytime you hear all this advice that's so well thought out from an expert, you sometimes try to say, okay, now how am I actually going to bring that into my relationship? And what are the actual words I'm going to say to, like, talk more about sex with my date or my boyfriend? So I think it's great to have someone who's just like, regular guy, I just want to give my perspective here to talk. So with that being said, what are some of the questions people come to both of you with, like, very frequently? Some of the most common topics you see?
One of the main ones is this normal? And we have heard, is this normal, from something as simple as, is it normal that I love to make out with my partner? Up to, like, something that's much more, you know, complex and complicated. But I think because we don't talk about sex that openly, it leaves all of us feeling like whatever it is that we like or don't like, that maybe we're secretly the only person in the world who likes or doesn't like that. So it's always interesting to see how strong that fear is for people. And then the number two would be combination of feels like we have mismatched sex drives. What do we do? Or I feel like I have a low drive, and especially in comparison to, like, my partner's higher drive, what do I do?
And probably combined with the first one, like, isn't that horribly abnormal that, that our sex drives don't match exactly 100% of the time?
Yeah, I feel like all those go so hand in hand. And I've heard you guys say before, like, it's so interesting that everybody is struggling with, like, these same things, but then they also feel like they're, like, completely alone. And, like, it's so weird that they're struggling with it because of the fact that people don't talk about it. Like, Vanessa, even when you were saying about your parents sitting you down for the talk, I don't even think I was given any talk. I feel like a lot of people are just, they just grow up, like, not even talking about it at all. And then it becomes something you don't even talk to your friends about. It was one of the things that brought me and I close when we first met, was that, like, we're both just somehow we felt, like, able to be open with the other one. And we talked to each other about things that, like, we hadn't talked to our friends who we were close with for our whole lives about. So it's definitely a topic that people feel intimidated by, especially with their own partner, which is the person you should be talking to about it the most.
Yeah, their own partner and friends too. Like, we hear this all the time. Like, I can't even tell my closest friends about it. Or, you know, oh, I'll get together for brunch with my girlfriends and everybody's talking about how hot their sex life is. So I feel like I have to be like, oh yeah, we're doing it all the time. Multiple orgasms every night. Like, you know, so people always ask that question, like, why is it so hard for us to talk about sex? And I think the better question is, why would we think it would be easy for us to talk about sex? Because what examples do we have? I mean, like, we're talking about the version of the talk that we each received. So you got the no talk, which
is very common.
Very common, which gives you the message of like, this is something we don't even touch. You know, I got the extremely awkward talk, which sent me the same message of like, we don't talk about this. And even if you think about like all the sex scenes that we grow up seeing on TV and in the movies, you never see people talking about sex in those scenes. So it's just another, you know, way that we're getting this message of we're not supposed to talk about this.
And yet it's supposed to happen totally seamlessly and effortlessly. And everyone is supposed to be like incredibly satisfied and it's super pleasurable with no discussion.
Yeah, with like so much chemistry.
Yeah, I mean, I think we even get the idea that like if you found the right person, if it's really the right match, if you guys are compatible, you shouldn't need to talk about it. It's like talking about it is a bad thing. That's what most people feel.
And I think that like plays into when and how you start even talking to the person you're with about sex because of all of those misconceptions of like, we don't have to talk about this. Like we're starting to date, like this is amazing. And it's just, everything's happening naturally. And I feel like it's hard to bring that topic up. Like we talked about with a friend, but even like someone who you've been sleeping with and you have, everything's been like going a certain direction for so long. Like at what point do you say, okay, now I want to talk about this and it feels awkward and I don't know how you're going to react. And are you going to think everything up until now was terrible and I'm only now bringing this up? So at what point do you think you should talk to someone new about it? And what are some of the ways that you would?
So here's the mistake that most people make is we either don't talk about sex at all in our relationship, or we wait until something is going wrong. Something's bothering us, frustrating us. Then we bring it up. By that point, we're so worked up and so anxious talking about it and so frustrated by whatever's going on that it ends up just spilling out of us and it comes out like a fight. And that only reinforces all these beliefs like, oh, I talked about it. It was a fight. We were so upset with each other. Feelings got hurt. Like, I don't ever want to talk about it again. So this was what we really wanted to set out doing in sex talks is like, we know at this point, people have heard the advice, like talk about it with your partner, but we don't know how to do it. So with sex talks, we really wanted to show people, here's exactly what to talk about in exactly what order, like all laid out for you. So we start, the first conversation is a completely different angle than the like, let me wait until I'm so upset and frustrated. So instead, what we think people should do is get comfortable talking about sex just as a topic, like in a positive way, even in a neutral way. So this could look like a very practical way to do this could be think of one of your favorite sexual memories with your partner and share that with them. So that's something you could do after listening to this podcast episode, like take a few minutes to think about it, share it with your partner. And just share it in a very casual way. Like, you know what popped into my head randomly today? That trip that we took, that hotel that we stayed in when we were in bed all day, like just popped into my head today. Really fun memory to think about, like just something simple like that. And then if you're dating somebody, like start talking about it early on in dating. And it doesn't need to be this like, you know, tell me your deepest, darkest fantasy right now, you know, but you can just start talking about it in the more casual sense. Sometimes it can be great to even say, talk about it more generally, like, oh, I was listening to this podcast and they talked about, you know, XYZ. What do you think about that? So you're not even asking them personal information. It's just kind of general, what do you think about that? What's your opinion on that?
And I think in many ways, you know, in a very like early stages of a relationship, or even when you're just dating around, in a way, it's almost easier to follow that advice that Vanessa just gave, because you don't have a history of maybe years and years of not talking about it.
Right.
You know, because I think that you kind of mentioned the scenario of like worrying, like, okay, well, what are they going to think now that I'm bringing it up after all this time? Like, have I been, you know, faking or lying or, you know, whatever? And now all of a sudden, you know, like there's an ulterior motive to wanting to talk about it. So if you're, you know, newly dating someone in a new relationship, it can be so much easier to, you know, just to slip in a like, hey, that was super fun last night when we did X, Y, and Z, or, you know, whatever it is, because you're setting the foundation right at the beginning that, oh yeah, this is something that I feel comfortable just casually talking about. And it's not like you know, we don't recommend starting with like, you know, picking apart like the last sex you had and be like, oh, I like that. I didn't like that. It's more of just the general, like, hey, you know, that was super fun. Like, I'd love to do that again sometime, rather than being like, okay, well, you know, I won't say anything because it's going to be weird. If that's how you feel, like, I guarantee you it's going to be 10 times more weird if you wait a year to say that.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. As uncomfortable as it feels in the beginning, it weirdly like only gets more uncomfortable the better you know them, which is like so strange, but I've definitely felt that before. What if you have been faking it? What if you have been with someone for like 2 years and you feel like you've been faking it, you don't really enjoy the sex, and like you finally are kind of ready to broach the topic and do something about it?
I'll give you two options for what you can do. So the first one is the harder one, but it can also be like the faster path towards having better sex. So the first one is to come clean to your partner. Like, I'm a therapist. In general, I do think that open and honest communication is a great thing to do in relationships. And the key with faking orgasm is to recognize, like, nobody ever fakes an orgasm to mess with their partner or like to be a jerk to their partner, right? You're not like, you know what? I'm going to really mess with him. I'm going to start faking it. And then 5 years from now, I'm going to tell him and it's just going to ruin his life. It's going to be great. No, like, you probably started faking because, like, as women, we feel so much pressure to like make it seem like the chemistry is working. It's effortless. We are easy to satisfy and please in bed. And so, you know, we do it for good reasons. It feels good in the moment. Like, that feels like the right choice to make. And then it catches up with us later. So you can share with your partner what it was that made you decide to start faking in the first place. So it might be something like, you know, I didn't really know my body. I'd never had an orgasm on my own. And I felt too embarrassed to tell you that, or I worried that you would judge me. So it just felt like the easier thing to do. So I recommend that more for people who have been like in longer relationships where there's, you know, more trust and there's been more communication between the two of you. Your partner is probably going to feel confused, hurt, upset, and you have to make the space for them to have those feelings. But then after you guys have processed that, it's a clear slate for you to kind of start over and say, okay, what do we actually need to do to get you to feel more pleasure and get more enjoyment? So I know option one is freaking scary. I know most people are probably listening to that, like palms sweating. Like, are you kidding me? I am not coming clean. So
yeah, what's option two?
I will give you option two. So option two is to like kind of tell a little half truth and to say to your partner something like, you know what? I've just been noticing lately, like my body's just not responding to the same things that it used to. Like even when I'm touching myself, like I'm just not feeling the same kind of sensitivity and I don't really know what's going on, but would you be open to like exploring some other things with me? So you're not saying, hey, I've lied to you. I've been faking all these orgasms, but you are creating this opportunity to kind of reset what your sex life is going to look like going forward and to sort of experiment and play around with some things. And then I recommend, we have these really incredible guides called our Ultimate Foreplay Guides that walk you through like step-by-step techniques for using your hands and mouth on each other. I think this is the, like, foreplay is the best way for women to learn how to orgasm. We can talk about this, get into detail about it if you want, but orgasming during intercourse is really difficult and unrealistic for most of us. So foreplay is the better way to explore. And if you get something like, you know, it doesn't have to be our guide, maybe it's some other guide that you like, but if you share that with your partner, like, you know, I found these really fun things for us to play with. I want to try some new techniques on you. Maybe you try some new techniques on me. Make it feel like a fun thing rather than a like,
yeah, something yeah, you're doing together.
You know, oh, it's just not working anymore. We've got to figure it out. Like if you approach it with that kind of energy, your partner is going to feel confused and bummed too. But if it's like this, like, yeah, let's like try some, I want to see if I can get you to feel even more pleasure than I've been making you feel, like then it's going to feel fun.
Yeah, I think people do it together is so much different than it's like, yeah, actually this hasn't been working. And so here I'm going to send you this and like, you need to, you know, like
fix
some
it.
like remedial orgasm education.
I love that. I really like option two, because I think also that likely can happen. I think like even thinking in a long-term relationship, things can start feeling a little like, no one's faking anything. But I think after a while you fall into a routine and you're like, I want things to be a little different. And I think because of every reason we talked about, it's just like embarrassing or awkward and you don't know the words. And if you've never talked about it, it's like feels a little risky to start like saying things that you want, whether it's like, a little more out of the box or just like, I don't know, seemingly just new. And I'm curious because I want to know, especially like since we have a lot of these conversations with women, Xander, have you ever been in a situation where a woman like brought up something new and fun that they wanted to do and told you you're like turned off by it? Like I want to express to people like you don't need to feel ashamed of bringing up something that's a little out of the routine.
Yeah, no, it's definitely an exciting thing. I think at the end of the day, it has more to do with your delivery of the thing. Because I think what can often happen is, you know, we kind of psych ourselves out a bit and we show up with this sort of almost like shy or awkward, anxious energy when we bring it up, where it's like, oh, like what would you think about this? I don't know. It's like it's kind of maybe kind of weird, but maybe kind of not. Like you're almost kind of hedging a little bit. And I think that that can actually end up, you know, increasing the likelihood that that your partner responds kind of in with the same energy, because they're like,
your partner's going to match your energy.
Yeah, like what's going on? Like, okay, they're bringing this up, so do they want this? But then they're also kind of setting it up as like maybe it's kind of weird, or so then it might feel like, well, God, unless I'm like really sure about this, then maybe it's easier to take the out that they just gave me versus like, hey, you know, I just listened to this podcast and they were talking about this thing, and I haven't thought about this a lot, but it sounded like it could be fun. And, you know, would you be into trying this with me with like, you know, no pressure that this becomes a regular part of our sex life, but, you know, just something interesting and fun to try. Like that is such a different energy than the first way I did it.
I've done that before too. Like the first version or even like when the person brings it up to me in kind of like an awkward energy. So then I kind of don't know how to respond and then I return that awkward energy. And then after the conversation, I'll reflect back and I'm like, oh, like I actually get what they were trying to do. Like that definitely went wrong. Like I just think like it's, you're right that you match each other's energy there.
It feels like it's catch. You're like, wait, but you're like saying it weird. So I'm supposed to think it's weird too, right? Like, you know,
like, are you going to judge me by saying like, yes, I want this? Because I don't know.
Approach conversations with the energy that you want your partner to have. Like the more you're able to do that, you're sending your partner a signal of like, here's how I want you to respond. They're going to match your energy. So if it means that you have to practice your delivery in front of the mirror for a couple minutes before you do it, that's great. Do it. But yeah, bring that energy that you want your partner to match.
Yeah. And I want to circle back to the foreplay because I've seen on your Instagram like so many people and their comments saying how great it is and how it changed their sex life and everything like that. So obviously everybody listening can go download it, purchase it and check it out for themselves. But can you give like a little preview of maybe like one or two things that you might find in there?
So one of our favorite things to do is to break down for people the stuff about sex that we all feel like we should know and be really good at already, but secretly we're like, I don't know if I'm not good at it.
Yeah, well, I mean, because look, let's be real, like no one ever teaches you
exactly
this stuff, right? Like, especially not like during the talk or lack thereof.
Right? Yeah, so it's like just like, you know,
this is like the course we never got.
Yeah, it's like if you enjoy cooking, you would never hesitate to buy a cookbook. You would never judge yourself. It's like, oh, I must be a really bad cook if I have to buy a cookbook. Like we create guides with that same sort of vibe. So our ultimate foreplay guides walk you through like step by step exactly how to use your hands and your mouth on your partner. So there's a vulva pleasure edition and there's a penis pleasure edition and you can get them together as a package. But we, really walk you through like with illustrations and super specific details. Like my biggest pet peeve is generic advice. I see articles about blowjobs online all the time. They're like, just, you know, go up and down and like have some enthusiasm. And I'm like, okay, but like, what do I do? what exactly doing with my mouth? What exactly am I doing with my hand? Like, how do what do I do first? And then what's next? And what's the buildup? And, you know, so we get into like this just enormous level of detail of like exactly what to do when, and really have a lot of fun with like exploring next level techniques. So it's like, okay, let's create the baseline technique, but then let's explore other ways to like, ultimately you're going to give your partner like the best sexual experience they've ever had. And like, who doesn't want to know I gave my partner their best sexual experience ever?
Yeah. And really what we do is we lay out a lot of different techniques, but really with the goal of figuring out like the two or three that your partner really responds the best to. And like Vanessa said, like turning that into sort of like the baseline of what you do. And then, you know, maybe occasionally throwing in one or two other things. So it's not actually, you know, despite the fact that we have a ton of different techniques, it's not about like, okay, cool, 30 seconds of this, 30 seconds of that. Because, you know, the reality is that most of us like consistency mm-hmm. when it comes to oral or manual sex, but it's knowing what all the options are, because the reality is each of us are going to have different, you know, different strokes or pressures or techniques that we like the best. There's no one size fits all for this. So it's just figuring out like, okay, what are the options? Which options does my partner like the best? And so then how can I turn this into sort of like, you know, an easy to replicate routine?
I love that. I think that is an amazing resource because again, like we talked about, these aren't the conversations that like come up at the lunch table with your friends. Uh-huh. And like personally love the emphasis of the importance of foreplay because I think that goes extremely underrated. And even like when friends do talk about things or like feeling like I'm feeling drier lately, or as I get older, my sex drive is lower. Mm-hmm. And I think that foreplay, like before anyone goes to a doctor and is like, I have something's wrong with me. I think yes. Advancing your foreplay could really help out in both of those areas.
We have like on page one of those guides, we're like, we actually hate the word foreplay because it implies that these are the things that you do before you move on to sex. Like, oh yeah, foreplay. Like, we spend like 30 seconds on that. And then, yeah, like, let's move on to intercourse, the real thing. And the reality is that you are going to get so much more pleasure and enjoyment from foreplay, you know, if you really treat it as like the central act, if we give it the same level of respect that we give intercourse. We actually polled our community and we asked women, like, is intercourse your favorite sexual activity? 91% said no. 91% of women prefer something other than intercourse.
Oh my God.
But yet most of us are like skipping through it so fast. And especially in long-term relationships, it's like the longer we've been in a relationship, the less time is spent on foreplay. So for most women, it's like, yeah, 30 seconds and it feels very half-hearted and you know exactly what your partner's going to do. It's like the same little stroke that they do. And so it's just not very exciting. And so of course, like, this can lead to not being very wet, not feeling ready for intercourse. You can experience discomfort, even pain from intercourse. If you're not ready, you're not going to feel as much pleasure. And you can even notice your sex drive start to decrease if you're not getting a ton of pleasure and enjoyment. Like, why would you have a sky-high sex drive for an experience that's like, yeah, it's not the greatest. Like, it doesn't make any sense to crave that.
Yeah. And I think that's different for women than men. I don't feel like a lot of men, and maybe I'm just like being judgmental or like stereotypical, but I don't feel like a lot of men are like, yeah, I have a real hard time like having intercourse if there's been no foreplay. And I think that's when, like, in heterosexual relationships, women don't like speak up and say that they want something that isn't happening.
Yeah, men get just as much pleasure from intercourse as foreplay because they're getting the same body part stimulated. Yeah. So whether it's a hand, mouth, or like a vagina or even anal sex, like they're getting stimulation on their penis. And the penis is the most sensitive part of their body. So of course they're fine with everything. Mm-hmm. But on us women, the most sensitive part of our body is the clitoris. And the clitoris and the penis are actually biological equivalents. They're made out of the same tissues. But with intercourse, you're not getting very much clitoral stimulation. Like maybe there's like a little bit of kind of secondhand rubbing that's going on, mm-hmm. like if you're on top or something like that. But in general, the clitoris gets pretty ignored during intercourse. So the funny comparison that I always love to make is that intercourse for a woman is like stroking a man's balls. Like it might feel good, it might be fun. But that's not going to lead to orgasm for the vast majority of men. And we're not like, we're not over here like, babe, why don't you orgasm when I touch your balls? Like,
yeah, what's wrong? Why are you taking so long?
Why are you taking so long? Why is it so complicated? Why do you need to have your penis touched?
Like, yeah, that's so extra.
So we need to like treat the clitoris and the penis in the same way, like, and realize like it's not a weird thing for us to not get a lot of pleasure, enjoyment, satisfaction, orgasm from an act that doesn't give us the stimulation that we need to feel all of those things.
But to be really clear, like we're not advocating for like cutting intercourse out of your sex life at all. Like I think, you know, the problem is when we don't talk about this stuff and when we look at sex sort of with like the running the bases analogy, where it's like, you know, sex is the home run, you know, it's, you know, it's the what we do after the foreplay, it's the thing that we're trying to get to. It's really easy to fall into that trap that, like, okay, yeah, just the penetration alone should be the thing that is getting us both there. And that is sort of the problematic point of view. Mm-hmm. That's what leads to what Vanessa was just describing of, you know, like many women having the experience that, yeah, intercourse just doesn't really do it for me. So, you know, I think that that's why we like to focus on foreplay and figuring out what techniques really work for you, like really understanding what gives you the best orgasm. How do you achieve that? And you can find ways to also start incorporating that into intercourse, or you can, you know, start alternating more like throughout your sexual experience, like some intercourse, back to some foreplay, back to some intercourse. Like that can be a really great option too. But yeah, I think it's like needing to learn, like, okay, yeah, that way of thinking about intercourse, that's not actually serving either of us. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, let's focus on the stuff that is really going to amp up the pleasure for her. And then we can start figuring out how do we adjust our routine so that, you know, both of our needs are being met and we're both feeling as much pleasure as possible.
Yeah, because I feel like it can be so easy as a woman to really just like prioritize the other person's pleasure and not think about yourself. But another thing that you mentioned earlier that people bring up a lot is mismatched sex drives, which, as we told you, people bring up a lot whenever we put up like any type of question box. And I know you guys talk about the different types of sex drives. Mm-hmm. So can you talk about that a little bit and then how to navigate that with your partner?
So first thing I want to say is it's so important to normalize mismatched sex drives. Like, I think most people get really freaked out if they feel like their drives are mismatched from their partners. Like, every couple has mismatched drives. Like, it would just be too weird of a coincidence that every single time you and your partner want sex in the exact same moment, the exact same kind of sex, like every, it's just not realistic. Like, we all have mismatches. And so it's just about figuring out how do we navigate it rather than worrying like, oh, this means we're not compatible.
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of like, you know, if you ask your partner, like, what do you want for dinner? It would be like expecting that you each want the exact same type of cuisine or like the exact same dish at the exact same time. And then it's like, oh, wait, like you wanted Chinese, but I wanted Mexican. Like, what's wrong? Like,
what's wrong with us?
What's wrong with us?
You know, it's like, yeah. It's
yeah. Normal. I even like hate the term mismatch now. Yeah. Like, I feel like you shouldn't even say mismatch. You should just be like, we have individual, unique sex drives.
Yeah. Like, you both have sex drives. Yeah. So if you're worrying and you're labeling yourself those having mismatched sex drives, the most important thing to do first is to understand your sex drive type. And this is something that most people don't even know exists, but it's really game-changing information, especially for us women. So the two sex drive types are based on where we feel desire first. So we can feel desire mentally, like the thought of sex sounds good. And we can feel desire in our body, like our body actually starts to respond, get turned on, get wet, get hard, you know, get prepared for sex. So the two types are spontaneous and responsive. Spontaneous is what we always see on TV and in the movies. And I actually hate that it's called spontaneous because everyone's like, oh, I want that one. But what spontaneous is you feel mental desire first. You feel turned on in your brain first, and then your body follows. So it's that kind of like out of nowhere, the thought of sex pops into your head. You want to go find your partner. And, you know, 10 seconds later, you're ripping your clothes off.
Yeah, you give them that one wink and then it's on, right?
That's how we always see it on TV. So the other type is the exact opposite, responsive. So we feel desire in our bodies first, and then our heads respond to that arousal that we're feeling in our bodies, like, oh, this is feeling good. So the classic sign that you might be a responsive type, and most women are responsive types, is if you've ever been in the middle of sex or even at the end of sex, and you catch yourself thinking, huh, this is fun. Why don't I ever seem to want this? Like, that's classic responsive desire. And what's happening is that in the moment, your brain is like catching up with your body and like, oh yeah, this is feeling good. I want to continue. So most women will label themselves as low desire or even no desire because they just don't think about sex. Like, if you approach a responsive sex drive person just in a random moment and say, hey, do you want to have sex? 99.9% of the time, they're going to say no because nothing's happening to their body. So there's nothing for their brain to get excited about. But it's not that you're low desire or no desire. It's just that you don't understand understand how your sex drive works, that you need that physical stimulation first before mentally it's going to sound like a good idea.
Yeah, it also means, you know, your partner has initiated with you in a way that doesn't cater towards your type of desire. Mm-hmm. So that's why it's so important for, you know, both parties to know which type they are so that you can figure out like, oh, okay, like, oh, my partner isn't spontaneous, then it's probably not going to be super successful for me to just spontaneously out of nowhere ask, do you want to have sex? Because the literal answer to that question is, well, no, because they weren't thinking about it. So, you know, it's figuring out what types of things can I initiate that are going to, you know, cater towards the way that my partner actually gets turned on.
Yeah, I can see how that is so helpful, because I do think we just start assuming certain things about us and everyone labels everything. And I love that it starts to just, like Carly said, we're just each unique and we can talk about that and find like a great middle ground. But I am curious, because this is another thing I think I see all the time in TV and movies, and it's just the stereotype that the man always has a high sex drive and always thinking about sex. And I feel like sometimes in my relationship, if I noticed that wasn't the case, I would start to feel bad about myself if I'm like, wait, mm-hmm. am I the one with a higher sex drive like right now? Or is something wrong that he's not initiating all the time? Or like, I don't know, like I'm trying something on in front of him and usually doesn't want to have sex with me. If I was in a movie, this would be happening. Can you talk a little bit about that too?
We have a podcast episode out today about this exact topic, like what to do when she wants it more. Because you're right. Like, it's not something we ever talk about, like, you know, the woman wanting it more. We always see the man like wants sex whenever, whatever, he'll take whatever he can get. You always see like stuff on social media. Like, I just saw this reel a couple of weeks ago of this woman. It was like, things I do to turn my husband on. Breathing, standing, like, you know, always jokes about that kind of stuff. Like, oh, men are always wanting it and women are having to kind of like, oh, we have to push them off. But we polled our community and we found that in 45% of male-female relationships, it's actually the woman who wants sex more. So almost half the woman wants it more, but we just never talk about it. So it leads women to feel like something is so wrong with them. And men too, like to feel really embarrassed and ashamed, when the reality is like almost half of relationships are this way.
Yeah, no, I mean, just as bad as women feel in this situation, like men also feel really bad in this situation, because men have been socialized their entire life, you know, from like puberty onward. It's like, yeah, like, oh yeah, like you're supposed to always want it. You're supposed to be thinking about sex. Like, you're supposed to be the one like initiating and leading and giving it and all of this stuff. And then it's like, if you get to a point in your life where you notice that that's maybe not happening for you, it feels like, you know, it can feel very emasculating. Like, everything that I thought being a man is, like, I'm not having that experience. And so that can be really challenging. I think it's a harmful stereotype that we perpetuate.
Yeah, I agree. It definitely is. And I think we did a similar poll with our community and had similar results. Like, I don't think it is, as much as that is a stereotype, I don't think it holds up so much.
Yeah, I mean, the thing about sex drives, like, we like to compare them in that way, but sex drives are so, like, they fluctuate so much. My sex drive, Xander and I have been together for 16 mm-hmm. years. My sex drive has been all over the place. So easy for us to put labels on ourselves, when in reality, like, things are always, you know, moving and adjusting. So there might be a phase of our relationship where I have a higher desire. Mm-hmm. There might be a phase where Xander has higher desire. I've been in past relationships, I've been the higher desire partner and I've been the lower desire partner. It's just kind of random of, like, you know, they're relative, mm-hmm. like who we end up being matched with. So I think it's important for us to stop putting these labels on ourselves and stop getting all worked up and just recognize, like, we're two people with two sex drives that work in maybe in different ways. So, like, let's just try to approach this as a team and figure out, like, what do we each need to feel excited about intimacy, mm-hmm. to have a good time with each other, to feel connected? Like when we approach it that way, the energy of it is so much different from like, we have mismatched sex drives and we have to figure this out.
Yeah. I mean, I think the problem with that idea of mismatched sex drives is that it can feel like one partner is the problem partner and they have to fix it. It's mm-hmm. it's like somehow the higher desire partner is like the okay one, like, oh, well, you must have the right level of desire, and then the lower desire partner must have the wrong level, and so they have to like figure out what's wrong with them, yeah. and increase their desire. And how are you going to increase your desire if you're feeling crappy about yourself? Yeah. You're already feeling bad about yourself. You're feeling like you're doing something wrong, or you're like, you know, driving a wedge in the relationship. Like, of course you're not going to just randomly start wanting something more when you're feeling bad about yourself. So it's so much better to try to address this as a team rather than an individual.
Yeah, I think that's so true, because it's like, if you don't talk about it, then it does just end up always being the one with the lower sex drive, like either saying no or that they're not in the mood. And then every time you feel like you're like doing something wrong, you're harming the relationship, and then the other person might feel like offended or whatever it is. So that could just happen over and over again. Or you could have like a yeah. honest, open conversation about like, listen, I prefer to have sex once a week. Oh, I prefer to have sex, like, and both like put it out there. And then you kind of set the expectations more so that they know it's not like a situational thing where there's some reason you don't want to do it just then. It's just because that's kind of like how you operate. So it's definitely just another mm-hmm. plug for communication.
Well, and also like to drive that point home even more, the top three causes of low sex drive are lack of emotional connection, unpleasurable sex, and sexual pain. And like those are all three of those things happen in the context of the relationship. Like if I feel like I'm the lower desire partner, I can't just like fix emotional intimacy on my own.
Yeah,
like
for yourself.
Yeah, it's something Xander and I need to work on together.
I love that.
You know, so again, it just shows you that it's like it's a teamwork thing, and it's important that we talk about it together.
Yeah, I'm so glad that you said that, because that has happened to me in past relationships where maybe we were like going through issues and they still wanted to have sex really frequently. And they're like, well, why don't you want to? And I'm like, well, I don't even feel like we have that emotional connection. And I feel like that's been a common thing in like friends that I talk to and with myself too, that like mm-hmm. I literally like need that. Whereas I found in the past, like, I don't think that men do as much, at least men that like I've been with. Maybe I'm choosing the wrong men. But is that like a male female trait?
Well, in some ways, yes. But what I was going to say is that, yeah, in general, like what you just described, there are two types of people. And very often in relationships, you have one and the other. And that's, you know, that some people like to have sex to feel connected, and other people need to feel connected in order to want to have sex.
Yeah,
you may be in a relationship where, you know, you're two of the same type, and that's awesome. But I think very often in relationships, it's opposites, because there are some, you know, the opposites or the sort of polarities attract a bit. And that can be a challenging dynamic, because, you know, that one partner is like, you know, really wanting to have sex because you're disconnected, and because they know that that for them is going to help them feel more connected. And probably they're thinking that it's going to help you feel more connected too. And they are not necessarily realizing that for you, it's like, you know, it doesn't feel good. It doesn't feel safe to have sex when we're not feeling emotionally connected. I think that in general, yes, like more men fall into the sex to feel connected camp. But I think mm-hmm. a lot of that comes down to socialization as well. You know, like men are socialized to, you're supposed to want sex all the time. And also, and at the same time, you're not supposed to show a lot of emotion, right? Like the only ways that men can kind of acceptably show emotion in our society is sex and sports. Like those are kind of the two places where, you know, men can show some emotion, can cry, can, you know, be emotional. And so very often in a relationship, a guy is like, you know, likes having sex because it gives him that opportunity to show some emotion, like in the moment or right mm-hmm. afterwards. And so, you know, that can be one thing that plays into that.
But I also want to say, like, our relationship is actually the reverse.
Yeah.
I'm somebody who likes to have sex to feel emotional connection, and Xander wants to feel emotional connection before having sex. So it's definitely, you know, of course, there are patterns, mm-hmm. but there are also lots of opposite patterns too.
Yeah. Yeah, that's really interesting. I never, like, yes, that makes sense. And I've thought about it before, but never like so much in that way, and how that can differ in a relationship. And even like you'll hear those couples that like have the best sex after they're in a huge fight. It's like there's so many different ways people kind of handle emotion and how that materializes in their sex lives. But quickly, I know we don't have so much time, but we did talk a bit about how obviously like a lack of emotional connection would lead to maybe a kind of a sex rut in a relationship. When you work with your clients and hear from your community, are there certain points in long-term relationships or marriages that are like quite common for falling into a sex rut?
It can really happen at any point in the relationship, but most couples will have one typically around the like 1 to 2 year mark. It's like that sense of novelty and excitement has worn off. It can often happen like when you, right after you move in together, it's like there's all that excitement of we can have sex in the kitchen. And then you get a couple months into it and it's like, we're not even having sex in the bed anymore. That definitely happened for us, like, slowing down after we moved in together. So that's a very common time for it to happen.
And then, of course, another really common time is, you know, after having kids. I think that is super common. We have a lot of moms in our community. And I think, you know, the problem there is that there can be some mismatched expectations. And also, like when it comes to having kids and sex, like we don't talk about a lot of things as well. It's like there can be that expectation, you know, there's sort of that stereotype that like, oh, well, like when you're pregnant, you're going to want sex all the time. And then somehow like only a couple of weeks after you give birth, like you're going to be ready to go again, even though like your body has completely changed and you now have another tiny human that is dependent on your body. So like, of course, your relationship with your body is going to feel different. And especially like your relationship with your genitals is going to feel different, because of childbirth. And so, yeah, that can be a really challenging time as well, because we just don't talk very openly about what that is like. You know, often all we hear is like, oh, yeah, you're going to go in for like a 6-week checkup and the doctor's going to clear you for sex. And then like, somehow magically everything's going to go back to normal. But of course, that's not, you know, 99% of people don't experience it that way.
Yeah. If somebody listening is in either of those phases, what are some other ways that you can maintain intimacy with somebody, even if your sex life is kind of like lower than it usually is?
So, you know, if you're feeling like there's just that lack of emotional intimacy and connection, I would think back to the earlier stages of your relationship and try to think of the specific things that you and your partner did together or your partner did for you that really made you feel loved and connected. And what's most important is the things like small, practical things that you could do on a daily basis. So, of course, if you took a like beautiful 2-week couples vacation, I'm sure you felt super connected, but that is not something that most of us can do every single day. So like, was it, you know, that your partner complimented you? Was it that the two of you used to have this really cute routine of like going for a walk after dinner? Like, what are those little things that you can bring back? And then I'll give you two specific examples that we actually have some research showing that they're really beneficial. One is a 6-second kiss. And the second one is a 30-second hug. So there's research showing that like the level of oxytocin in our bodies, that, which is the hormone that creates that sense of like bonding and connection, increases after a 6-second kiss and a 30-second hug. So those are very practical and they take 36 seconds a day. And then I'll also say one other very easy one is gratitude. And I know everybody's heard of gratitude and it's kind of like something we almost roll our eyes over, like, yeah, okay, I'm gonna get my gratitude journal. But research has actually shown that gratitude is the number one predictor of marital success. It's that important.
And we're not talking about like over the top gratitude. We're talking about very simple, just like, you know, instead of just acknowledgement, like, oh, hey, like, I saw that you emptied the dishwasher. Thank you. I appreciate that. I think it's so easy in a relationship to fall into a routine where it's like, okay, well, those are their chores and these are my chores. And like, it's our jobs and, you know, we just do them and we expect that the other just does them versus like, you know, hey, yeah, they're each of our chores, but like we can still be appreciative that, you know, you're in a relationship and you have a teammate that is doing stuff that if you were to be living alone, like you would be doing all of that yourself. So like, yeah, like why not say thank you a couple of times throughout the day? It can be so helpful just to receive that acknowledgement or validation that like, you know, that it's appreciated what you are doing to support your relationship.
Yeah. So all three of those things are fast, they're easy, they're free. So we should all be doing them every single day.
Yeah. I love that. Those are such amazing tips. I really do like the gratitude one. And I see that playing out in my own relationship, like never letting something just become an expectation. And I feel like my husband's really good at that. Like he's very vocal with appreciation. So, I mean, it really does like feel nice to, for each of us to be like seen for things that are just so commonplace and normal.
I think like one of the saddest things about long-term relationships is that like we've been together for so long, but we feel like we don't actually see each other anymore. And, like gratitude is such a great way to show your partner like, no, I still see you. I still appreciate you. And it's also like, it's a gift that you give to yourself. Like it feels really good to say to your partner, like, hey, that shirt looks really nice on you. Or like, I appreciate the, you know, that you made me a cup of coffee this morning or whatever. Like it feels good for you too. So it's just so, such a simple thing to do, but it's so powerful.
Yeah, I totally agree. Can you guys tell everybody listening where to find you? I feel like this time flew by and I know you guys offer an incredible amount of resources. So we'd love for everybody to be able to check it out.
Yeah, so you can check out all of our guides at vmtherapy.com. It's my initials, VM Therapy. We have those ultimate foreplay guides. We have a very similar guide for intercourse called Next Level Intercourse. And we have challenges for couples like a sex challenge and an emotional connection challenge. So you can check those out there. And then we are very active on Instagram. We're at Vanessa and Xander. You can find a highlight with all of our guides and courses too, but we usually show up in stories every day and help you talk about sex with your partner and get more comfortable with it on your own. Our book, Sex Talks, is at sextalksbook.com. So you'll can find all the links to the major retailers there. And we also give you a free workbook if you come back to the page after you purchase it.
And then finally, our podcast is called Pillow Talks, and we're there every week.
Thank you so much. This was amazing. And yes, everyone should check out all of those because your resources really don't disappoint. I love them all. So thank you both for joining us today.
Yes, thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.